This is ensemble member Robert Brewer, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
I'm Associate Artistic Director David New, and I'm here with ensemble member and Artistic Director of Steppenwolf, Martha Levy.
Hi, David.
Hi, Martha. How are you?
Good.
Today we're going to talk about the 09-10 season, which we've just announced. So the theme this year is the power of belief and how it relates to authenticity.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about what the process was when we all began looking at plays and reading plays, our initial sort of instinct toward a theme, and then how that developed to the theme that we have now?
Yes. You know, the initial impulse, David, was that we wanted to concern ourselves and focus our reading on the idea of faith. And so we began reading, and this would be Ed Sobel, our director of new play development, and Joy Meads, our literary manager, and then ensemble members who are based here in Chicago. And we would meet every couple of weeks, and the group would be sort of changing. It was when people were available, and there were some people who were quite consistent in their attendance. But in any case, we were reading a lot of different plays through this filter of faith. But what we discovered as we began winnowing the plays down is that our kind of collective principal interest was in the idea of faith in the secular realm. We didn't find ourselves concentrating on work that engaged faith as it meant religion or represented religion in a play. And so we began to feel that representing a season around the idea of faith that wasn't dealing specifically with religious faith was curious, and realized that the real inquiry that we were pursuing had to do with belief. All of us are theater artists, and we understand so much that the contract that we have with an audience has to do with belief. And, of course, the very famous phrase about a willing suspension of disbelief, that part of what the theater goer is doing is making a kind of leap of faith. I will give you the treasure of my attention and my feeling, my compassion, on the idea that you are going to be telling a story with a great deal of authenticity. And, you know, then that resonated out a lot in terms of the stories that we were finding in the plays. I'll take an example. Endgame is probably, just as The Tempest served as a kind of play for the season of the imagination, Endgame perhaps has that same quality because it's dealing with a very existential landscape.
That's so interesting because both this season and the imagination and next season belief are so tied up not only in the stories that are created on stage but also in the very act of coming to the theater as an audience,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep.
You're engaging belief or suspending disbelief and you're activating your imagination.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Why don't we just talk through the five plays then that are being offered under the subscription series for
Right.
next year. So we start with Fake.
Right. Which was written by our ensemble member Eric Simonson and will be directed by him. Eric, of course, the playwright for and the director for most recently Carter's Way at Steppenwolf. And you know, you help me describe it because there are actually two worlds that are represented in the play. And the first takes place in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. Arthur Conan Doyle, one of the characters, of course, the author of Sherlock Holmes. And the second time zone that the play occupies is the 1950s. Say what happens in the first time zone.
We're in England in both time periods, and the play begins in the home of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who has assembled a group of people who are connected in some way to the discovery of the Piltdown Man,
right,
which is a skull that was believed to be the missing link between ape and man.
Right.
And he's, you know, he's an irascible Scotsman, tremendous sense of humor, but very cynical about the discovery and accusing each member present of having some complicity in it.
Yes.
And the audience is sort of thinking, oh, this is going to be a, you know, whodunit about
right,
the fake. The element that's added to this is an American journalist, a woman that Sir Arthur has brought over to sort of expose whoever is found out to be the, you know, perpetrator. And the style of that time period sort of plays out like a parlor game or
right.
a parlor drama.
Right.
It seems very sort of well-made play. The second part of the play that's set in the 1950s, we go to the British Museum, and it's the continuing investigation into the authenticity of this piltdown man's skull. And again, an American comes over to join a team of archaeologists to investigate this. But we get involved in the personal lives yeah. of these men. And again, there's a single woman amongst this group of men, and the relationships and the loyalties shift. And notably, the actors who play the characters in the 1890s also play roles in the 1950s
right.
that resonate with one another
right.
in some way. I think it progresses much more in the realm of psychological realism.
Yes.
And there's a kind of access to the emotional life of these characters that compels us in a way that's contrasted by the plot of
right.
the 1890s compelling.
Right, right.
So the second play of the season will be American Buffalo by David Mamet, directed by ensemble member Amy Morton.
Right. Amy has wanted to direct American Buffalo for a long time. Of course, she's a kind of, I think of her as a Mamet specialist. She was in our production of Cryptogram in the Upstairs Theater, golly, a long time ago, and was wonderful in that. And then, of course, directed our production of Glengarry Glen Ross. But I think also Amy, you know, she was part of the Remains Theater throughout the late 70s and the 80s. And that was sort of a, in a way, wouldn't you say, for a Mamet era in Chicago. He was actually very recently sort of a resident in Chicago and working and just beginning his career. And I think there's something that in Amy that has always resonated to that deeply Chicago voice.
Yeah, and it was when Amy was really learning her craft that there was tremendous buzz around those
yes.
productions, and everyone was very aware that these new plays were being written and produced in Chicago by this new playwright, David Mamet.
Yes, and in fact, I know that Amy's training, because mine was too for a period of time in the Meisner acting technique, was at the St. Nicholas Theater, which was Mamet's theater.
Right. And just, can you just encapsulize how the theme sort of lives in that play?
Well, yes. I mean, it's probably a story that's familiar to a lot of our audience, but it involves, if you will, three generations of men, each represented by a single character. And their common meeting place is, meaningfully, a junk shop. A pawn shop, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
So immediately we're in the world of commerce, and we're in the world of shady commerce.
Yeah.
And a heist is planned of a coin collection that has in it an American Buffalo nickel. And I think what we see through the action of the play is that these are all guys who are kind of feeding themselves on an American dream which has to do with attaining wealth, making money. And of course, Mamet's eye says, yes, stealing money. And the American Buffalo serves as a kind of insignia of, yes, and going all the way back to the American initial theft, which was from the people who were native to this land.
So then we move from the Downstairs Theater, where both the first and second production will be presented, to the Upstairs Theater for the brother-sister plays by Terrell Alvin McCraney, directed by Tina Landau.
Yes. It's a real thrill to be able to premiere Terrell's voice in Chicago. We met Terrell originally when he was an actor at DePaul. He studied at DePaul University, and he was in a production in our garage directed by Tina Landau called Theatrical Essays. And Terrell went sort of immediately to the Yale School of Drama, where he got his MFA in playwriting and rather quickly gained a lot of notice, both in the United States, principally in New York, and then in London. And he's been very successful as a writer. And Tina has directed a number of those productions, which that artistic relationship, of course, is very meaningful to us at Steppenwolf. But further, Terrell has a voice that is really multivocal and rich. You know, the brother-sister plays, okay, it's three plays. And the way that Steppenwolf will be presenting them, the two shorter of the plays, the brother plays, will be the bill on one night. and alternating with them will be In the Red and Brown Water, the longer of the plays, the Constitutes of Full Evening, the sister play. And it's a little difficult for me to describe entirely, but what I find happens in the collection of those works is I gain insight into what feels like a multi-generational village. Terrell uses Yoruba myth and storytelling to fund some of the character understanding and the relationships. But it also, he uses contemporary Bayou, and he's got a very sensitive ear toward the music of language, and indeed draws a lot of music into the play. And what the sort of constant string that's pulling us through is the identity of this young man, and that is fully realized in the final play, Marcus, or The Secret of Sweet. It's a kind of coming-of-age story for that young man. It's a coming-out story, and it's very much about gaining that, for that young man to gain his real ground, his real authenticity, in a community which both is very loving and embracing and meaningful to him, and in some ways is resistant to the emergence of his identity.
Yeah. The emergence of that identity within the context of community, within the context of family, and even really within the context of his own soul, his own interior.
Yes.
Yeah. Then we move downstairs for Endgame, which we talked a little bit about, directed by Frank Galati, by Samuel Beckett, of course. How did the discussion evolve around this choice?
Well, we read a collection of plays that we were describing as kind of absurdist plays. We were reading Beckett, we were reading Ionesco, and it was clear that from this, you know, ensemble collection of people that we really did want to do one of the plays that was happening in this vein. In other words, that was happening in a world that was very, very clear to us, very understandable, but strange, remote, and imagining. And I think Endgame is just really, it's my favorite of the Beckett plays. And Frank Galati is a kind of master Beckettian. So Frank is very tuned to the humor of it, the absurdity of it, the fun of Beckett. There's nothing somber or intellectual in his approach to it. It's a robust embrace of the absurd comic genius of that insight. And Billy Peterson. Billy has been our newest ensemble member. He said, Frank and I have been talking about doing Endgame for 15 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Really exciting. And then finally, we end with a new play by Bruce Norris, who is kind of a Steppenwolf playwright, really.
Yeah.
Entitled A Parallelogram, and that'll be directed by Anna Shapiro.
Yes.
We did a reading of this last spring, and we're very excited that Bruce was working on a play that seemed to be able to fit into the kind of theme that we were thinking about for the season.
Yes. This is the sixth play by Bruce Norris that Steppenwolf has produced. This is a play that we commissioned. And again, as you said, his, you know, artistic colleague, Anna Shapiro, directing. A parallelogram. Golly, it's hard to describe the story, right? But there's a young woman, B, probably, what, in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a relationship with a man. And what we discover, and we don't know if this is something that's always been true of her or it's a kind of sudden ability, but it appears that B is able to kind of travel time. And there's another character with whom she seems in kind of constant dialogue, B, who's known as B alternately, what, B1, 2, and 3.
That's right.
Who seems to have lived the life that the young bee is now observing with this time refractive ability. But I think what Bruce is really pursuing here is this question of which is our life in a way, the life that we are living or the life that we imagine as alternative. The idea of the parallelogram is a kind of device that he explores in the play where he talks about it's as though two trains are running side by side. And one, just as I said, one is the life that in fact is happening, and that there may be an alternate life living right beside it. Is that our imagining? And, you know, Bruce and I just personally talk a lot about, I think it's not uncommon for us as human beings to think about what should have happened, or to live, have very vividly in our heads a life that was supposed to be ours.
Mm-hmm.
As though that's a reality.
Yeah. I'm quite excited after having had this conversation.
I have to admit,
it's a terrific season. I'm really excited to see how it turns out.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
And I
thank you, Martha.
Know that you will be really enjoying leading our audience in the conversation.
Absolutely. If you'd like more information about the Steppenwolf 09-10 season, you can visit www.steppenwolf.org. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, David.
AT&T is the sponsor of online content at steppenwolf.org.